Okay, we want to look at the second interpretive guideline, and this is entitled, Proverbs is Poetry, Ugh or Yahoo. How many of you really enjoyed poetry in class when you were being taught it in school? I see 4 hands, 5 hands, oh, 6 hands, oh, this is 7, this is an unusual group. Most of us struggled with poetry. Why? Why do we struggle with poetry, in English poetry, French poetry, whatever you studied it in? Why do we struggle with poetry? Because we don't know what it's trying to say. Exactly. Why has poetry survived? Since a majority of people struggle with it because we're not sure what it says. To make you appreciate prose. Good. Yeah, and I think most of us have felt like that a number of times. Are there any other reasons? It expresses ideas in a nice way and in memorable ways and sometimes very, very powerful ways. It draws mind pictures. It piques the imagination. Poetry does things that prose can't do. We need both. Imagine if we were to have to carry on business in poetry. Hark thou, distributor, how, you know, it would be pretty gruesome. We need prose. We need business language. We need, we need shorthand and so forth. But we do need poetry as well. We would realize it if all poetry were taken out of our society. Where would you notice it the most and the most immediately? Greeting cards. Well, yeah, except I don't buy greeting cards very often, so I wouldn't notice them too quickly. Where even quicker would we notice it? What?
Our hymns,
songs, everything you hear on the radio, every song. Very little of it is prose. You know, unless you're listening to Bob Dylan or somebody who, you know, talks all the way through whatever they were doing, but even that isn't really prose. But, you know, all of music, hymnic literature, just common music that you hear, it's poetry. It's not prose. And so we miss it, and we would notice it. And so we do have trouble with poetry, but that's what we have to get used to with Hebrew. And so we need to understand the basic literary forms and devices. We have already looked at this just a little bit, and that is that you have two types of statements. You have the wisdom sentence, and then you have the admonition. In your notes, I've defined the wisdom sentence as an observation based on experience, which is stated in the indicative mood. This is the way it is. 10:1 through 22:16. It's these short little maxim statements. It's just making some statements, drawing some images. And so you can just start anywhere you want. I'm going to start at chapter 14 and verse 3. In the mouth of a fool is a rod of pride, but the lips of the wise will preserve them. Okay, you got a rod sticking out of this guy's mouth. Oh, well, there's a poetic image, and he's going to do something with it. Verse 23 of 14, in all labor there is profit, but idle chatter leads only to poverty. And you can see somebody just talking and talking and talking, and as they talk, they become poorer and poorer, and their clothes get more and more ragged. And so you just, you know, it brings images. So you've got the wisdom sentence, just statements. The way it is. Chapter 12 and verse 4. An excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who causes shame is like rottenness in his bones. And so it gives a poetic image describing two kinds of wives. So 10:1 to 22:16 and then 25, chapters 25 to 29 are largely of this kind. Then you have the admonition. And this is positive instruction or command or negative prohibition. It's do this or don't do this. And it may add reasons. This is what you find in chapters 1 to 9. So you can pick up just about anywhere. And I used this passage last night out of chapter 1. After it says, "My son, hear the instruction of your father and do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, 'Come with us, let us lie and wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent. Let us swallow them up,' and so forth." Then it says in verse 15, "Do not walk in their way. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil." And so it's giving an admonition, extended instruction, extended advice, extended command, positive and prohibition. So you have those basic types of statements in Proverbs, and you just kind of need to be aware of that when you're reading Proverbs. But then you also have to realize that Proverbs is poetry. And Hebrew poetry works not the way English poetry does. And that's good, because it would be very difficult for us to read it today as non-Hebrew speakers if it worked like English poetry, with rhyme and with meter. Though there is some meter involved with respect to numbers of syllables, and it's a two-line thing, yet it's rhyming, it's ideas that rhyme, ideas that are put together rather than sound rhyme. Think of it as thought rhyme, okay? Or thought contrast. And that's how it works. And so what we're dealing with is the idea of poetry, and the idea of parallelism. Just as in poetry that we have in our own culture, poetry is the language of sensory experience. It's drawing a memory or a recollection of a smell or a sight or a sound or an image. And through the senses, it's getting at and conveying an abstract idea. And it's the interplay of paired ideas. They call that parallelism. You're putting two statements next to each other, and you're putting them next to each other in certain ways that then are the key to understanding what is going on. And here are the various kinds of parallelism. And I have these in your notes, not in this order, but let me just reveal these, and then we'll go back and talk about them. There is synonymous parallelism, in which the ideas are simply restated with some slight modification. There's antithetic parallelism, in which you have contrasting ideas. There's synthetic parallelism, which is the idea of completion. And then there is just comparison, which is the idea of saying something is better than. And then there's sharpening. Not only this, but even this. And so you will find these basic kinds of parallelism. Now, the largest category is antithetic parallelism. Chapter 22 and verse 3. Now, 90% of chapters 10 to 15 are of this kind. They are contrastive statements. And you find this over and over and over again. 22:3. "A prudent man foresees evil and hides himself, but the simple pass on and are punished." The key word there is "but." There is a contrast. And it develops the theme of the two ways, the two paths. This is where you see this coming out so much in the book of Proverbs. And so you have antithetic parallelism. And like I said, that is the largest category. Now, Just gave you that one. Antithetic. A prudent man foresees evil, hides himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. And you have these comparisons. You have synonymous parallelism, 22:1. A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. And so it basically is saying the same thing. There is a comparison. Although oftentimes there's a slight advance. There's something added in the second line. And this is part of the intriguing thing of Proverbs, is that the more you see, or the more you look, the more you see. A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. And then in the second line, loving favor rather than silver and gold. So you've got great riches, silver and gold. Well, those are, you know, not much advance there. But what about loving a good name and loving favor? Are those exactly synonymous? Are those exactly the same thing? Not really. Well, how do you relate that? How would you relate a good name and loving favor? Any thoughts? Let's think about, what is a good name? What would a good name imply? If a person had a good name, does that mean like Bob or Fred as opposed to... Reputation, okay? Reputation. So a good name comes from somebody having a good reputation. Now, what's a good reputation have to do with loving favor? Okay? Could be. Loving favor has the idea of somebody acting. Who do you suppose is behind the loving favor here? Probably God, okay? What is a good name, a good reputation I have... of my good reputation, what would that have to do with God's favor? Okay. So blessing for being obedient, God showing His favor in terms of a reward sense, and that's a biblical theme. God favors us, you know, by grace when we don't deserve it, but He also shows His favor and His good pleasure in our obedience and through our obedience. And so you can see how there's a little bit of an advance there, and yet it basically is saying the same thing. So you can see how so much can be compacted in a proverb. And so proverbs are meant to be meditated upon. You can't read it like a novel, you know, where you're cutting out the description to get to the action to find out who done it. Okay? That's prose. It's poetry, and there can be a lot compacted there. And Proverbs need to be meditated upon. Synthetic parallelism is basically the two lines don't really have a comparison or a contrast. The second line is really finishing the thought of the first one. The rich and the poor have this in common. The Lord is the maker of them all. So those two lines are really part of one statement. And that's, we call it synthetic, just putting the two things together, synthesis to make one statement. And then there's comparison. Better is a little with righteousness than vast revenues without justice. This is 16:8. And you will find a number of these comparison, sort of like antithetical, but it's really in a different form. Better is a little with righteousness than vast revenues without justice. Comparison, parallelism. And so you're, again, learning something from the way it is stated. There is sharpening parallelism. He who has a deceitful heart finds no good, and he who has a perverse tongue falls into evil. He who has a deceitful heart finds no good, and he who has a perverse tongue falls into evil. They're sort of saying the same thing, and yet the second one is just really sharpening the first. It is adding a little bit more information, but going beyond. Finding no good and falling into evil are really kind of different, aren't they? And yet, the lines are saying the same thing. He who has deceitful heart, he who has a perverse tongue. And really, as you look at that, a perverse tongue comes out of a deceitful heart, doesn't it? Okay? And so we find a sharpening. We find, again, some advance on them. So the key is looking at the two lines, thinking about how they are related, how they kind of flow together. Ron, I'm thinking we might could hand out those other sheets that have the chapters of Proverbs on them, and might just do a little bit with that here in this session. Okay, we're not ready for that one yet. Let's just look at your notes, page 10, special considerations for interpreting individual Proverbs. One of the most important principles for interpreting the Scripture is context, is looking at context and understanding the statements that are being made within the context of the larger section that it's found in, whether it be a paragraph, the chapter, a book. It's well known, and you can easily see it, how cults and those who people who espouse various doctrinal aberrations do so by taking verses and taking them out of context and making the verse say something other than what it obviously means within its context. And I'm sure you have run into that and seen that if you're talking with somebody at the door who's espousing a certain religious belief system. They'll always be bringing up these verses. You just know that's not what it says, but you're not always ready to say what it does say. And even when you do, they just flee to some other non-context. Figure that one out. but Proverbs doesn't give us the same help with respect to context. Especially when you're reading in the latter parts, when you're reading in these maxim statements. For instance, in 21:1, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord like the rivers of water. He turns it wherever he wishes. And then the next verse, every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the hearts. Well, verse 2 really doesn't help you with verse 1, and verse 1 really doesn't help you with verse 2. Now, the extended admonition section in the first 9 chapters, that has more of a context. But these Proverbs from 10 on largely don't have a context. And so you're somewhat, you know, you're just kind of left to your own. And so there are some special considerations with respect to interpreting Proverbs with respect to context. And here the internal context of the statement itself takes on a greater importance. Now that doesn't mean that you interpret Proverbs without recourse to thinking about the rest of the Bible or without thinking about the rest of Proverbs. And this is one reason why I think it's important to understand some basic things about ancient Near Eastern wisdom literature, how wisdom literature works, what it's saying, what it's not saying. What we will do in the first session after lunch, well, the first session in your notes, our Proverbs promises, will help with that. But you have to keep in mind generally what Proverbs are about and how Proverbs are working, but then you pretty much have to just work within the section itself. And so internal context does take on a greater importance. Secondly, other verses in the immediate context don't play as great a role in the theological context as the whole section that it's in. Now, in this case, if it's a statement in in chapter 12, it's going to be the whole section in chapter 10 through, what was it, 22, wherever the next section was. And so what you will do is you'll look for common proverbs in that section. Thirdly, a study of subjects and words is important in interpreting individual statements. A study of subjects and words is important in interpreting individual statements. And this is where I want to just work a little bit with you with respect to a way of surfacing subjects and so forth. Has anybody ever done subject studies in Proverbs? Any kind of a subject study? Nobody? Good. This can be fun. There are tons of topics, subjects in Proverbs that have a bunch of verses on each one of them. But we're kind of aware of this because we see some things repeated, but we don't often take time intentionally to ferret these out. But I would suggest that that it would be extremely profitable for you to start devising a personal topical marking system for the book of Proverbs. And I want to give you just a little bit of experience in that. You've got a section out of, I'm not even sure what version this is. It's either the New King James or the New American Standard. I don't know what it is, but it's Proverbs. You've got chapters 15 and 16, a little bit of 17, a little bit of 14. And what I'd like you to do is just start reading down through here. I'm going to have this group over here on my right, your left, start in chapter 15, and this group over here start reading in chapter 16. So we're just reading in two different sections. I'm going to give you about 3-4 minutes, and I want you to just look at this, and I want you to write out in the left a topic that comes to mind with Proverbs. All right? Let me give you an example. It says, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Now, somebody suggests a general topic that whole verse would fit under. Huh? Speech. All right? There it is. You got one. Speech. And so just jot speech out there. Now, I want you to go down through and just see how many different topics you can find. I'm going to give you 3 minutes, all right, to do that. And then I'm going to have you share them. So this group over here is doing, what did I say, chapter 15? And this group over here is doing chapter 16. If some of you wanted to start at the bottom and read backwards, no, don't do that. So just quickly do that. And just see how many different topics you can come up with. Just one-word statements. It doesn't have to include everything. You might see two or three things in a verse, but just come up with a topic, and let's see what happens here. So go ahead and have at it for a couple of minutes. Okay, take about another minute. Okay, I lied, 30 seconds. Okay, count up how many different topics you got. Just very quickly, count up how many different topics. You may have had some repetitions. But how many different topics you got? Count them up very quickly. Okay. How many did you come up with? Somebody give me a number. 6. Anybody have more than 6? 8. Any more than that? 10. Any more than that? Okay. That's great. That's great for just a few minutes. And it illustrates what a variety of topics there are. Now, what are some of the topics you found? We've already mentioned speech. In fact, in chapter 16, there are tons of verses that have to do with speech or the tongue. What else did you find? Finances. Give me what passage? 16:8. Finances. All right. Another one. I'm sorry.
Obedience.
Okay. Obedience. Where? 15:5. Okay. Discipline. Yeah. I would expect that in there somewhere. Do you have a verse? Okay. Discipline. The what? Okay. All right. What else? Pride. 16:5. Good. Another one. Anybody?
Conduct.
Conduct. All right. One verse for that? 15 or 16? Okay. All right. Love. All right. Contentment. Yeah. Good. Another one? Anger. Yes, 15:1 and other places. Okay, 18. Well, that's the theme of the whole book, but there are some that specifically, do you have a verse? Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's sort of one of those, it's all over the place. It's almost not a topic, it's almost a principle of the whole thing. Give me some others. What?
Confidence?
Countenance. Good. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, spirit of man, the inner person. Okay. All right. Some others? Decision making. Okay. Yes, ma'am. You had another one?
Slander.
Slander? In which? 1628. Okay. Some more? Self-control. Verse? I'm sorry, I didn't hear. 32. Okay. Others?
Prayer.
Okay. Huh? Pride. Okay. Pride is mentioned too. Yeah. Good. The sluggard. Where is the sluggard in here? 1519. The way of the sluggard is as a hedge of thorns. Another one? Self-control. Yep. Which one? 1632? Okay. Okay, well, we could spend the rest of the day just on these two chapters. Now, one of the things that you need to do with Proverbs is to realize that there are subjects and themes spoken of, but scattered all over the place. Now, in our nice, neat, organized Western ways, we could kind of wish, why didn't you collect them? Solomon, you're smart enough to know how to collect these into anger and into speech. Why didn't you do that? You tell me, why didn't he do it? Why didn't God direct him to do it? Why do we have Proverbs, these things so strewn all over the place? Make you search. Is there any profit in that? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Christ started teaching him parables because he got to a point in his ministry where he needed to force people to search for the truth in a new way. It's one of the reasons. And, okay, any other reasons?
Repetition.
Right. And if you had everything in the same place after you read the second verse, your mind would tune out, wouldn't it? But when you run across it in a different place and you run across it every so often, it comes in a little better. What else? Yeah. And that's the way life is, isn't it? So if you're reading a shorter section, you are taken across a whole cross-section of subjects in just a few verses. Somebody mentioned something up here? Yes, and there's an interconnectedness with the different things. And so you find them in different relations in different places. Now, nobody has been able to figure out how to outline this section of Proverbs, and people have tried. There are some ways of saying, well, here's a key word here that links this together, and you can see that. I mean, if somebody were to say, let's talk about the tongue, I would open it up to chapter 16, because there's a large locus of verses about speech in chapter 16. But that's not the only thing in chapter 16. And so, there just isn't a nice, neat, orderly way to arrange it. But is your life arranged in a nice, neat, orderly, sequential packages? You deal with certain things on Monday, and you deal with other things on Tuesday, and you deal with other things on Wednesday. January is the month four, and February is the month four. Does anybody have a life like that? No. Life isn't like that. Proverbs is designed to give us skill in living life as we encounter it, as we experience it, as we walk through it. And so that's why it's arranged like that, because that's how life presents itself to us. And there are 31 chapters in the book, and there are 31 days in most of our months. And you can read a chapter of Proverbs a day and be exposed to all kinds of things that have to do with the living of life. But you would also be wise to try and design a way to come up with some ways to hang on to those, to have handles on those things. There are a number of themes. Like here are some paired themes. I don't have a lot of overheads on this, but there are a number of paired themes in Proverbs. We've already looked at some of them. There's laziness, the sluggard, and diligence. There's obviously wisdom and folly. There's life and death, pride. You also find humility. The rich and the poor, love and hate, righteous and the wicked. There are a number of paired themes in Proverbs, but they don't all occur together. And then there are a number of subjects that develop in a more extensive way. I mentioned the fool, okay? And there's this Far Side cartoon that I just love, and they're standing here looking at this room full of people. And the one scientist says to the other, or whatever, "Yes, they're all fools, gentlemen, but the question remains, what kind of fools are they?" In the book of Proverbs, you have five words that define people along the spectrum from the naive to the hardened scoffer. We have the word for simple, which we looked at earlier already. You have three different Hebrew words in Proverbs that are almost consistently translated by the single English word fool in almost all translations. Now, you're a bit in a disadvantage because of that, because you don't read Hebrew. And then you have a word that is generally translated scoffer or something like that. And when you look at all those words, you will find like over 50 that are of the stubborn, and then not a whole lot hopeless. There are a few ignoble. And by the way, that ignoble fool, the Hebrew word is Nabal. Does anybody know of a Nabal in Scripture? Huh? Yeah, and who is he? Nabal. What did he do? Yeah, he acted in a very foolish way against David, and his wife came out to try to mend the consequences. And that's one of the words that's used for fool in Proverbs. And Proverbs is so rich in the whole idea of subject study. And this is a perfect place to do theme studies, topical studies, subject studies. The book is set up to do that. The book is designed for that. And so it takes us across all of these different things and allows us to see how that works. Now, after lunch, we've got a bit of a time for a question and answer session. And I want to share a little bit more with you about how you can get into this. But it fits in with this guideline here that a study of subjects and words is important in interpreting individual statements. Word studies are critical when it comes to Proverbs. As I just indicated, there are three different words that translate fool. Now, it's been difficult to access this type of a thing, but with computer programs and so forth, you can open up all kinds of text programs and commentary programs and click on a word, it'll tell you what the Hebrew word is. It'll tell you what the Strong's number is. And then you can use the Strong's number to go to some other resource and it'll give you a definition for it. You can do all kinds of word study using the Hebrew or Greek roots with your computers. And it really will help in Proverbs. So you can find out what the word for humility or pride is. In fact, there are several. And you can start looking and studying and how they contrast and start grouping them. And so what we find here is that this is a primary place to do subject studies, and Proverbs is designed for you to do that. And I'll share with you after lunch a way that you can devise your own system of abbreviations and mark your Bibles or mark a Proverbs text that you might copy off, so that you could quickly go through and find subjects and start generating your own subjects. And I'll share a little bit more about that after the lunch. So you have to think of Proverbs in terms of subjects. They're scattered out all over the place so that we bump into them regularly. But we ought to be able to think in terms of topics as well. And so I want to challenge you to start thinking about that, and I'll give you some aid tools to that. And then fourthly, the introductory prologue is critical for interpretation. To know what you're looking for and what it's doing and what these maxim statements are designed for. For the longer sections like chapters 1 to 9 and 30 to 31, you can look for literary clues, structural links, there's repetition, there's catchwords, there's themes, and we will look at some more of those in our session this afternoon. But you have to be aware of just the basic literary idea, how Proverbs works with respect to poetry. You don't need to become a Hebrew scholar, but just kind of understanding that you've got paired lines in these little maxims sayings, and they are doing different things. And just looking at them, you don't have to even understand what they're labeled. That's just for convenience. But to just understand that those two lines put next to each other are communicating a whole, almost a whole universe of ideas sometimes. And it's the way life is. You know, we run into a life, a little experience, a little slice here. We can look back and say, boy, there was a whole lot more in that encounter than I thought. And that's the way Proverbs are. So we'll come back to this little exercise and think a little bit about how you can turn this into a part of your regular reading and start developing a topical system on your own. And I'm going to share this with you instead of handing you one, because the joy of discovery and the profit of the discovery and doing it yourself would be far more valuable than if you were to take mine or someone else's. But Proverbs is poetry. We can enjoy it. You're not going to get graded on it. You're not. it does enrich life, and it does help us to really appreciate, and it does help to communicate. Yeah, any just quick questions on this? Okay, you've done some good work here, and we will follow up on this a little bit after lunch.